I'm a typical example of women in Australia who are over 50 and who don't have that super to back them up. So basically, women like me, we have to work until the day we die. There is no other way to do it because the pension in Australia is not going to cut it. It's barely going to pay rent. So it's at the moment, there is a rather large growing population of homeless women who are over that age, 50, 55. And as I said, it's just going to get worse.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
We don't all end up with the pot of money at the end of our working lives. The number of older homeless women over the age of 50 is growing. They have not all had continuous employment throughout their life, either through circumstances or by choice. Today's guest was a stay-at-home mum and has been working in the homeless sector through not-for-profits for many years now. And we will be shining the light on this sector that does not seem to have much support. Hi, it's Anne Nelson. Welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy podcast show. And today my guest is Wendy Coe, and Wendy lives on the Gold Coast. That's Queensland, Australia. Hi, Wendy, how are you?
Hi, Anne. I'm very well.
That's great. And Wendy, you have worked in the not-for-profit space and also in the homeless space. So can you tell me a bit about yourself and what drew you to working in this sector?
Well, I guess it starts for me when I was 13. I was homeless due to varying family factors, which I won't go into, but I did find myself on the street a couple of times and finally left for good when I was 17. So having experienced what it's like out there, that certainly has always been in the back of my mind as far as what I was doing career-wise. It took me a long while, I guess, to get my life back on track because of I was a drug addict. That's very common with people who have been through, you know, what I went through as a child. So it took me a long while to get my act together, so to speak, and to get off drugs. And then I had a child, and then I went back to university, got an associate degree in law, and then just sort of was a stay-at-home mum for a long time until my daughter was a teenager, and then that's when I sort of got back into the workforce. And I have gravitated back towards that not-for-profit sector and to the homeless sector. And the homeless sector encompasses a lot of other sectors because the reasons why people become homeless, it overlaps drug and alcohol addiction, it overlaps domestic violence, it overlaps housing crisis, affordability of housing, it overlaps teenagers and being thrown out of home, it's family dynamics, it kind of overlaps everything. So that's where I've spent my time in the last, say, 5 years in that space. And I'm back at uni again doing a degree in criminology. So that's where I'm at now.
Wow. It's an amazing story you have, and congratulations on having a tough life and overcoming your challenges and not letting that define you as well. And now you're back studying, so it's never too old to change your life, is it?
No, that's right. Well, I got to a stage where the last year I've been unemployable, despite having a lot of experience working, not having the right degree or not having the right course. I just wasn't getting interviews. So I had to step back and take a good hard look and say, well, you know, it's not working. definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, you know, expecting a different result. So I realised that I needed to go back and get some sort of degree in this space that will actually help me with employment in the future.
Well, good luck with that. Criminology, it's on the TV all the time, so I suppose it's all different these days to in the past.
It's not criminology as in CSI. It's a lot of theory about how, you know, who commits crimes, why people commit crime. There's a lot of psychology in there. So it definitely is of interest to me as far as forming policies around how we deal with people who commit crimes and also the outcomes of different programs. That's what I'm really interested in. What we're doing now with people who commit crimes is just not working. With the charity that I work for, I visited Numumba Prison once a week and visited the ladies up there for a couple of years. And it's a revolving door, just a revolving door. So we need to reassess of how we're dealing with people who are in prison so that they don't end up there again. But unfortunately, that's not a boat grabber. So different sides of politics wouldn't bother with it, but it's not top priority because the hard line is lock people away and forget about them. But the fact is that most people get very small sentences and come back out. You know, I've had to pick people up from train stations who have been let out of prison at night and they've got nothing. And we expect these people to somehow live a miraculous life the next day. So I guess that's where my interest lies, in making lives more sustainable and better for perhaps people that can't, you know, work out how to do that themselves.
Thank you. It sounds very admirable what you're doing. It's interesting about labels, that people get labeled once they've been in prison, and people outside all label them the same because they've been in prison. I suppose they're all bad, and it must be hard for them to come back out into the outside world and to pick up the pieces.
Well, what do you put on your resume? What have you been doing for the last 12 months? When you have a blank in your resume, you have to somehow explain it. Even if you're going for like a very, I wouldn't say menial jobs, but jobs that don't require a lot of skills, say like, you know, working in a coffee shop or something like that, you still have to explain to employers where you've been. So it's like, do you get creative and lie, or do you tell the truth and hope that someone will give you a chance? 9 times out of 10, they won't give you a chance. So this is the space that I would like to get involved with, is to help those women especially to regain skills and give them back those spaces on their resumes, basically.
Mm. It's amazing that there isn't more help out there for them. And you say you've worked with the homeless, and for other reasons they're homeless. And I'm interested in hearing about the older women that end up homeless and with not much to their name. And how are you supposed to have a decent retirement when you've had such a tough life?
Well, it's bad now, but it's only going to get worse in the future. When you're talking about over 50-year-old women, not everybody has had that career since they were 18 years old. And now most women take time out to have children. Even if they take out 1 year, it affects how much they earn. It affects their super. So I'm 52 and I have $37,000 in super.
So that's, for my overseas listening, super is like the equivalent of a 401k. It's your retirement savings that you've put aside.
Yes. So because I spent time not working, and then I spent time being a full-time mum, and then I spent time in part-time work and casual where you don't get that super, it hasn't built up. So I'm a typical example of women in Australia who are over 50 and who don't have that super to back them up. So basically, women like me, we have to work until the day we die. There is no other way to do it because the pension in Australia is not going to cut it. It's barely going to pay rent. So it's, at the moment, there is a rather large growing population of homeless women who are over that age, 50, 55. And as I said, it's just going to get worse. With marriage breakups, you know, especially if you don't have a house to whack up between you, if you haven't bought that house and paid it off, you know, in your 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you're getting divorced, you've got nothing to whack up, so you have no backup financially. Rents are so huge. It takes up more sometimes than 50% of somebody's income. We have a lack of single accommodation in Australia, and especially here on the Gold Coast. Housing Commission houses, it's a 15-year wait. You'll be dead by the time you get one. You'll never get one. In Sydney, they are saying to people it's a 20-year wait for Housing Commission. Now, if you're a 50-year-old woman, you literally are going to be dead, you know, before you get a house. So you've got this constant struggle of where do I find rent? I actually met a lady the other day who lives in a caravan on her daughter's side property, like beside the garage. So she hooks the electricity up to her daughter's, but she has to go inside to use the bathroom. And she was very typical story. She's 64 and she's not going to qualify for the age pension until she's 66, new rules, not 65, 66. So they have her on unemployment benefits and she's walking with a walking stick and they're insisting that she is capable of working. So until she gets that retirement thing, she has to go and pretend to look for jobs and she's not being looked after. And her life is going to be very typical of the older woman in Australia who doesn't have that financial backup, who's never owned a house, where you're going to be left with nothing but sleeping in a caravan, couch surfing, or putting yourself in vulnerable positions by sharing houses with people sometimes you don't know or you don't know very well. So it is a huge issue and will be a huge issue in the future.
It's absolutely amazing what you're saying. Is there no one looking at different types of accommodation that could be built, some sort of nearly like, I suppose, how they have the student accommodation where they have their rooms and then they have shared facilities?
There are a couple of tiny projects, but I don't think anybody in government has grasped the enormity of the problem in the next 10 years. There's a lot of help in the space for domestic violence and accommodation that's getting bigger and bigger all the time. But there's a lot of women who are just going to fall through the cracks. Ideally, those sort of semi-shared, as in you've got your own units, but you're sharing, you know, gardens, that sort of thing, or even sharing a kitchen, but having your own sort of little wing. The thing, it's money. It's all money. So the NRAS scheme that was here in Australia, which is being phased out now, that was not supported accommodation. It was private investing, but it was a scheme where the government gave a tax back incentive for lower rents. But they built a lot of 3- and 4-bedroom houses. They very rarely built single accommodation. In fact, there was one up in Woodridge and it was 8 units. And they were all rented out within like 30 seconds. I know, because I was a real estate agent. I worked for a different not-for-profit then and we were renting them out and there was like 50 people had applications on all the units. It was just madness. So there is this real lack of accommodation, yes.
I was talking to a lady who's 73 years old and she wants to move down to this from up here in the tropical north, Townsville, down to the Sunshine Coast where she has a friend, but she said they're looking at $400 a week and on the pension she doesn't think she can afford to, even though she wants to move, but she said she can't afford
$400 a week on the pension.
No.
Women then are forced to share or you know, live in caravans or go to places where they don't know anybody. I mean, there are towns out the back of Queensland where you can get houses, whole houses, for under 300, even under 250. But there's no services, there's no internet, you don't know anybody, there's no jobs there. That is somewhere that should be investigated to make towns that are a long way away more accommodating, because they're not renting those houses out there because everyone's left because no jobs and because it's drought. But then there are houses out there in outback Queensland available to rent at very reasonable prices. So I guess it's someone has to start thinking about encouraging people to move out to those places and enjoy the benefits of having very cheap rent.
Yes. Yeah, here in this little area, we're only half an hour from a major town, but yes, there is cheaper accommodation here, but then there's no public transport to get to town, so you have to have your own wheels.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Homeless women over 50 or women with not much resources and not much retirement savings, it's going to be tough for them to continue or to have a happy retirement, I suppose, if they haven't got that support behind them. So are these women without much family support as well?
Not necessarily, but I guess if you're in your, 50s, 60s, are your children who have their own lives going to want you to live with them? I mean, it's a huge intrusion. I know my daughter wouldn't want me to live with her until the day I died. Her son-in-law wouldn't like that, I don't think, either. They have their own life and they'll probably have children soon and, it's a big intrusion on somebody else's life. With different cultures, it's not. You don't find this issue with, say, the Italian population, because Italians have three generations under one roof all the time. It's normal for that culture. They don't throw their old people out in the street or in dime. They look after their nonnas. So it's a cultural thing too with Australians.
Right. In some countries, having multi-generational families living under the one roof is common and is possibly a solution, but obviously not for everyone. So what can these women do?
Oh, dear. It's a very hard question. I think you just have to get up every day and just keep trying to work. And it's going to be an existence, basically. That's what it is. Unless you are in your 50s and you can suddenly have a great career where you're earning over 100 grand, you're never going to own a home. And the future is quite bleak, and it's only going to be eking out subsisting. That's all it is, because you can't miraculously make a house appear. And when you don't have that, even if you do get a job, for example, if I suddenly started to earn 100, 120 grand, it'd take me quite a while still to save a deposit, because when you are a single earner trying to get a home loan, there is still that bias in banks not loaning to women, despite what they say. Especially if you're an older lady, because your earning potential is drastically decreased as compared to someone in their early 30s getting their first home loan. If you're trying to get a home loan in your 50s or 60s, it's damn near impossible on a single wage. So there is no one solution. I find it a very bleak outlook.
I suppose we can only hope to get to the younger people and say, don't spend all your money now, because you never know when you might need something to support yourself.
Well, the thing is also, what do we say to 20 and 30-year-old women? Because 50% of their marriages and relationships will end.
Really? Is it that high?
Well, that's the stats. Yeah. 50%. 35% for marriage, but then up to 50% for all other relationships. So what do we say to those women? Don't have kids, work your butts off until you're 35 and have separate bank accounts and squirrel away money, have assets in your own name. Do we say to women, don't do joint houses, don't have joint bank accounts? Do we teach women to keep all their money separate? And what does that do to relationships then if you're not going down on the same path, being together? Because it is a real issue, is that half those relationships will fail. And that's when, you know, you've got to chop up the assets. And if you're still paying off a house, there's not going to be anything to chop up anyway. Mm-hmm. So I guess it is a dilemma. But I think we can start looking at housing, definitely, and the way in which we look at the concept of housing, how it doesn't always have to be one block, one house.
Yeah.
And we don't all need a huge backyard.
No.
We don't all need, you know, the quarter acre block. And as you said, there are different areas around the world who are looking at this. Do we need to build more caravan parks?
That's what's happened with old caravan parks. They've ended up being redeveloped into units, I suppose, or apartment towers, because traditionally caravan parks in Australia have been close to the ocean, so they're all prime real estate now.
Exactly.
So you'd have to go in. You have to go inland.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Do developers start thinking about when they're developing a whole new suburb and they're putting 3- and 4-bedroom homes on them all the time? Do we start thinking about councils forcing the developers to have X amount of 1-bedroom duplexes as part of the development application, just the same as we make developers have X amount of car spots per unit if they're building a unit block? Should we now start thinking about the different types of houses and forcing developers to build what's going to be actually needed?
Mm. I know that's very good information, and I think councils do need to look at that it's not just a state government responsibility or a federal government responsibility. I think they all need to be working together down to the city council level as well. I have heard of people that they take their pensions and go and live in a third world country.
Yes, definitely, because you can have that quality of life and live like kings and queens, and even have someone coming in to clean and cook, and it's like a third of the price of what it is just to rent somewhere in Australia.
Yes.
Every month I go onto realestate.com and look at accommodation in outback areas, and there is a lot of accommodation. There's also ex-mining areas up Gladstone Way, and there was whole towns that were built just for mining, and the mining is gone, but the houses are still there. So I think that it's not an option that people even are aware of, and I think we should be encouraging more people to get out of the cities. We're getting clogged in the cities anyway, and it's all smelly, and there's so many cars, and it's smog, and it's hustle and bustle, and I think maybe even not just for older women, but encouraging more families who are doing it tough economically to move out into country areas, and especially people perhaps who are on a disability pension. So there are rules and regulations when you're on unemployment benefits where you can't move to a town that doesn't have great employment. You're not allowed to. So it forces people to stay in the cities and overcrowding and overpriced accommodation. But certainly with age pensions and with disability pensions, there are those criteria. You're actually free to move wherever you want and you'll still get your pension. So I think we should be encouraging those people to perhaps, you know, move into a smaller town, get out of the big cities. And that way that's actually freeing up accommodation in the cities. So I think we just have to get our head around, like, if you were born in a certain area, you've got to stay there, you know, like, and you're saying, like, you know, going back to uni at the age of 52, well, I'm just an adventurous type, you know, and I could certainly go and live in a little country town and do that. I've done it before. But I think we're not encouraging people to even think of that as an alternative. And the benefit of living in a smaller town is you know, your neighbours, you have a lot more civic pride and a lot more community involvement, and they're probably going to be a little bit better looked after out there as far as being loved by the community than they are by staying in the city anyway.
Mm. Well, that's an option that's available for most of us. It seems as though Australia needs to have more people that are available to help, not just the domestic violence people, but for the other women that end up homeless for other reasons or end up with just not much to have a successful retirement, I suppose. Yes. It's
yes, I mean, there's a whole I don't know the stats, but I know that just from the people that I talk to every day and have done for years and years, that there is a whole group of people who will never have security of housing ever.
So I suppose that's what we need to investigate. How else can they still have a good life without having that home ownership? Because not everyone ends up owning a home.
No, that's right. That's true. But perhaps there is, you know, different schemes we call rent-to-buy schemes. There's not much of those in Australia, but there's also next to nothing for people who are, say, on a pension or, you know, as I said, somebody who's on a disability pension. But there is also about over 1,000 houses vacant at the moment in Queensland, Housing Commission houses. They're just sitting there vacant. So that's an issue that needs to be addressed. They're in disrepair, or, you know, they need a few things done to it, or they're in towns where people don't want to go because of lack of employment and because, as I said, if you're unemployed, you're not allowed to move to those areas. So we've got 1,000 houses, over 1,000, I think it's probably closer to 2, that are just sitting there idle. Now, fix them up and get people into them. It's not a hard thing to do. You've got empty houses and you've got people who need to live in houses. There is also a huge issue with Housing Commission where they will only put a family into a 3-bedroom house. So a single person can't move in to one of their 3-bedroom houses. But if a house has been sitting in a town for over a year and they can't find anyone to move into it that's a family, don't you think they should just move a single person in there, get people off the street, get that person into housing?
Sounds logical, doesn't it?
Oh, it's all logical, but, you know, that's the problem with this day and age. Too much red tape, too many rules, and not enough people to actually get an issue, shake it up and say, like, let's just get it done.
So, in summary, what help is there? I mean, is homeless women or women, older women, get classified, I suppose, but you're saying that if they've suffered domestic violence, there's more help for them. What other classes of homeless women are there?
Well, women who are addicted to drugs and alcohol. That's another class that overlaps DV, it overlaps homelessness, it overlaps everything else. We have a lot of people, you know, would go to rehab or detox and then maybe rehab and then they're back out the streets again with no accommodation, nowhere to live. So there is help for domestic violence victims, but there's not a great deal. I hope you didn't get that impression that there was just so much more. It's very difficult to find anywhere. For example, on the Gold Coast, there's only 2 domestic violence services, 2 domestic violence refuges, 3 if you count the Salvation Army one, but that's not just for DV, it's for women of any age who find that or any reason that they find. So certainly more domestic violence refuges need to be built. There is certainly in the area of addiction, more help needs to be done in sustained help over a long period of time. Unfortunately, there's lots of programs available for a lot of different things, but they only deal with one issue. A lot of people who find themselves homeless, and I'm including the older women as well, there's lots of different things that have led people to being homeless, not just one. There's never just one issue. There's a lot of different issues. So we have very few services that we call wraparound services that deal with all of the issues. So you may be a victim of domestic violence, but you've also had your finances tied up and your finances are shot to pieces. So you need help with a lawyer to get your finances back on track, because your partner may have put holes in walls and in rental properties, and then you're on the lease, but so now you can't rent anywhere else because your name was on the list and you're blacklisted. So when we say wraparound services, there's never just one reason why someone becomes homeless. So, you know, even in my case, being my age now, I rent, I work part-time, and now I'm studying. If something happens and I lose this job, I am in severe housing distress. I simply will not be able to pay my rent. But I would be one of the few who only has that one reason. I meet a lot of women who have been victims of domestic violence. They have or have had in the past drug and alcohol addictions. They have emotional trauma that they're carrying with them, maybe a stint in and out of jail. And so you need the services to be funded so that you deal with all of the problems. One service and say one caseworker working with a lady who was dealing with all of the problems, not, well, you go there for that problem and you go there for that problem and you go there for that problem. Because in that case, people have to tell their stories over and over and over again to a whole lot of different people. And that's very tiring and it's very emotionally draining. And it sometimes it causes even more trauma than not more trauma, but it re-traumatizes people having to go over and over and over everything all over again.
It sounds like we need something like they're introducing in Australia, My Health Record, where you can have your health record shared amongst any medical personnel in Australia unless you choose not to join it. It sounds like that would be something that they could look at as well, so they don't have to repeat telling their stories.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Anyway, we could talk on and on and on, but it has been really interesting, and thank you very much for sharing some of your story and also making us more aware that there is a big problem out there, and it's harder for women once you get older. You've got less time up your sleeve, I suppose. That is it. We've either been working part-time because, or been the breadwinner, not the breadwinner, but we've been looking after our family, so we haven't been earning the money, and we can just end up on our own through marriage breakups as well. And there's a big percentage of people out there that have never owned a home, and you've highlighted that. And it seems as though there's no coordinated way that this sector is being helped.
No, absolutely not. But I think in the future we have to really educate women about finances. It was something I was never taught. I did economics in high school, but it didn't teach me how to do a budget. It didn't teach me about home loans. It didn't teach me about interest rates. I think there is lacking in our education system, basic financial skills. And certainly in the area that I've worked in, most of the people that I've come across have absolutely no financial skills whatsoever. So certainly that's one area I would like to see improved on for the next generation of women that are coming through, is sound financial education and advice.
Yep. Well, thanks very much. That's very good that you've identified something we can do to help the future generations. And then we also need to look at different types of housing to make it cheaper for people on their own to find affordable housing going forward.
Definitely.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.